Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for taking your Sunday evening or afternoon, depending on which coast you're on, and spending it with me. Hey, today we're going to be talking about a number of things, tips for parents and tips for children to keep your kids safe from being abducted. You know, we've talked about the statistics on child abductions. Today we're going to take a deeper dive, and we're actually going to give the tips, things to look out for in that process so that it doesn't happen to them. But before we do that, as always, I'd like to give out the phone number in case anybody has any questions that they would like to call in. Our 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Or you can go to our website and find it there as well. But you can also email me questions, as so many people do, at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. That's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Or if you want to get on my blog or my, you know, for my email blast about upcoming show topics, just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828. Enter your email address. Text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. And then on Thursday or Friday, you'll get an email from us telling you exactly what the topics will be for the upcoming show. Sometimes people take that topic and then send me emails, so that works out quite well, quite frankly. And I want to also mention thank you for those that have purchased my book, Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. That's doing very well. You can find that at www.lulu.com. All right. Okay, let's get into this a little bit. But before we do that, there's a couple of things. You know, sometimes I like to do my little shout-outs and things before I start getting into the emails. The first thing I want to just mention, I was at the grocery store a few days ago, and there was a customer in the store in line before me. He had his son in the basket, you know, sitting, you know, with his legs out. You know how it is with those little kid carriers there. And nice-looking little kid, you know. And you look at that, and the father was there. He's taking things out of the basket, and on his son's wrist was his name on one of those ID bracelets. And I mentioned it to him because let me tell you guys something. We know that those things are cute and all of that. People have a tendency sometimes to put their child's name on their sweater, on a hat, you know, other places sometimes. You know, chains around their necks or whatever. But stop and think about something for a moment. These children are very vulnerable. You've heard me talk about this on the show. And although that may look like a little cute thing to do, think about it. You're in a grocery store, as an example, and, you know, sometimes these children just wander away because parents may be looking at something on the shelf or whatever the kid, whatever, you know, the situation may be. Now, here's somebody that's, you know, a child snatcher, so to speak, and they're casually walking around looking for opportunities, and now they see somebody's name, like a child's name, on their shirt or their jacket or, like in this case, on the wristband, and it was like an ID bracelet. And now the child hears that name because what will happen is with some of these people, they'll say, hi, little, I don't know, I'll just say little Jimmy since my name is Jim. Hi, little Jimmy. And kids, you know how kids are. Kids are very, very friendly. All right, which can be problematic, quite frankly. So here we'll say, as a child, you're paying attention to something, you know, on the aisle. The child is wandering, you know, behind you or something like that. Now somebody comes up, or the child wanders off, I should say, and now that they know the name, hi, little Jimmy, how you doing? And now the person, you know, stretches out their arms with a smile, and the kid walks toward him because the kid, they recognize the child's name. You know, you call the child by name. So my point is, look, don't be so free to put your child's names on things. I know in school sometimes the parents wants to make sure that their sweater doesn't get lost by little Kathy or little Joni or whatever the kid. I get all of that, all right? But if that's the case, you want to do it for the school. Put it inside the jacket so there's always some place to be able to identify with that. But don't be broadcasting your child's names on these different things, because that to me can open up a door to an abduction. All right. So we'll be talking about abductions a little bit later, obviously, but I wanted to get that out. It was a nice guy. He was very open to it. And, you know, he realized, it was like, you know what, that's true. So I wanted to share that story. At any rate, the other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into the other topics for the day, we have to keep in mind 9/11, guys. 9/11 is this week, right around the corner. 9/11 changed who we were as Americans. It changed us as a nation. So we want to be able to remember on 9/11 there were so many people that were impacted by that event. But I want to back up for a second, because, you know, I'm always big on also telling people that, look, these things aren't new. I have people weekly tell me, oh, yeah, this has all just been within the last few years. And that's not true. So let's back up a little bit. The date's February 26, 1993. 18 minutes after noon, a huge bomb went off. Do you remember where? It was beneath the two towers of the World Trade Center. The terrorists had parked a truck, okay, with a bomb in it. Now, the good news was only six people got killed. Of course, it wasn't the good news for them and their families, but I think you understand what I mean. But more than 1,000 people were injured. Bill Clinton was president at that time, by the way. So what I'm telling you is that there was the first strike. And probably when Osama bin Laden realized that it didn't work, I mean, because like I said, only six people got killed, and 1,000 more were injured. This place was already a target. And again, this was 1993. We're talking 8 years later. It took them 8 years to go ahead and plan this other business on 9/11. Now, I will bet you people don't even remember the details of what happened that day. But just, you know, and that's why I like to revisit these things, because it calls attention to this. We cannot let our guard down. Now, I'm not saying they let their guard down in 1993, because they had to come up with a different strategy. Let's follow. Let's face it. You know, the hole that they blew in the floor, by the way, went up seven stories, all right, from that truck bomb. But let's keep in mind what happened on 9/11. The first one was a flight, okay, on American Airlines and United, American 11, United 175, all right, heading to Boston. Newark, United, flight, 93. You remember where that one was heading? That was heading to L.A. Then Washington, Dulles, heading to L.A. on American Airlines flight number 77, and then Newark, United flight 93, and that was heading to San Francisco. Now, if you notice, a lot of those were heading where? To the West Coast, from the East Coast. They were just taking off. That meant they had full tanks of gas. That's why they chose the flights to the East, I keep saying East Coast, but to the West Coast from the East Coast. Because that's why when these flights hit, like the World Trade Center, et cetera, and they hit the Pentagon, et cetera, that's why the explosions were so massive, because they were on a full tank of gas. So you had Boston, you had Newark, you had Washington, Dulles, and then you had Newark. Now, how many of you actually remember how many people got killed that day? And we should never forget this. It was 2,977. But the injuries were 6,000 plus. So you're talking about an impact of almost 9,000 on that day. Now, how many of you remember how many countries were actually impacted by that event of 9/11? There were 90 countries impacted by that event that day. 90. Remember what it was, okay? It was the World Trade Center. People from all over the world worked there. But here's what we forget. We're talking on that day, there was 2,977 deaths and 6,000 plus injuries. But you know what? We can't forget the other impact either. And that's important. Do you have any idea how many have died since that event of that day? Well, let me just tell you. 1,140 have died since then, because they were diagnosed with cancer from the exposure to the toxins that were at ground zero. Now, these are people who either lived, worked, studied, in Lower Manhattan. So these people were impacted even though they weren't in either of the two towers. So when you add that up to the other numbers I just gave you, the numbers start to increase. We don't think about that. And I'll tell you something else. That 1,140 number was just the ones that lived, studied, you know, and worked in Lower Manhattan. Let's not forget the rescue workers who responded. You have any idea how many rescue workers who responded that day have since died? And I know occasionally you see on the news about some of these things about, you know, I think not too long ago was a fireman that had passed away. Well, let me just tell you something. 1,400 9/11 rescue workers who responded that day have since passed away. Look at those numbers. So 9/11 for us is more than just an event of that day. And quite frankly, sadly, these numbers may still go up. These numbers may still go up. That was a horrific day in American history. And it's one that we probably will never forget. For those of you that go to New York, you need to go by the 9/11 Memorial. It is phenomenal. So we won't be able to forget from that perspective. But again, the details of this, these things get lost in time. As I have told you before, you know, none of these things are new. These things are going to continue happening, and we've got to be prepared for them. It is just that simple. My concern is that all of these kind of things have been focused on the East Coast. My concern is something happening in some other major cities and other cities throughout the country, especially on the West Coast. But we'll just have to wait and see. And I'm hopeful. Hopefully, I'm wrong on that. But anyway, so please on 9/11, don't forget not just the tragedy for the families for that day, but also the people who, after the fact, have also passed away. And their families as well, all right? So I'm sure on 9/11 you'll see a lot of things on the news for those of you that are news watchers. But if you're not, just remember on 9/11 to send some thoughts out there of a positive nature. Okay, let's move on. Jim, oh, this is my first email. Jim, I understand the West Texas shooter failed a background check after it was found that he had a mental problem and had been in a mental institution for a while. Isn't this just another example of gun control being a waste of time? Sally from Savannah, Georgia. Look, Sally, and, you know, it's true. You know, we keep going around and around on this thing about gun control. We get a lot of emails on the gun control issue, a lot of gun control issue on the news. Now the politicians are back, so we'll wait and see what happens. But let me just tell you, and let me clarify for the listeners, and I think for your purposes also, yeah, the West Texas shooter, you guys, did fail a background check after he had been adjudicated with a mental defective, okay, as a mental defective. And I'll tell you what that means in a moment. But look, he wounded, just as a refresher, he wounded 25 in a shooting rampage, all right, and he had failed a background check back in 2014. He wanted to buy a firearm. He was denied because they had done their due diligence and said that, hey, he's had some issues with the past. He's actually had some run-in with the laws in the past as well. And he had even been temporarily committed to an institution. So he had issues, there's no doubt about it. Now, on the news, you generally could not get his name because now a lot of the law enforcement people don't want to give out their names to lend any credibility to these individuals. But this guy's name was Seth, S-E-T-H, Ator, A-T-O-R. He was 36 years old. And he had been committed to an institution in 2006, and he was deemed a danger to himself or others at that time. Now, that commitment, in all honesty, was, what, over 10 years ago, whatever it's been now, 13 years ago. But he still managed to get, what, a firearm. You have any idea what he got? First of all, he bought a AR-15. And guess what? He didn't buy it through a regular channel. He bought it through a private purchase. So here we go again. It's a private purchase. Who is doing background checks with private purchases? He had no choice but to do it through a private purchase because he had already failed the background check. He couldn't get one any other way. And that is, Sally, one of the arguments that's out there regarding gun control, is that how do you stop people from selling guns to each other? I mean, somebody who's trying to sell a gun is not going to ask the person whether or not you've been, you know, ever been institutionalized. And by the way, a mental defective, that's a term used in federal law to describe one category of people prohibited from purchasing or owning a firearm. They call them mental defective, all right? Meaning that it's not going to be a clean situation. They're not going to be able to purchase, all right? So if you hear that expression on the news, that's what they're talking about. But it was a private sale. And obviously, those do not require a background check, nor are the person selling that weapon going to look into the person's past. They just want to sell the weapon and end of story. So that is, in my opinion, going to continue to be a problem. And I don't know what legislation they're going to be able to come out with to be able to do what? To stop those kind of things. If anybody's got any suggestions, you know, on this, you can always give me a call. I gave you the number, 818-602-4929. Now, this guy had been charged before with criminal trespass, evading arrest. He's been in public intoxication fights, all kinds of different things. And they said that even with this particular incident, he had been drinking all night and got into a conflict with somebody. He ended up getting headbutted or something. So who knows what was going on in this guy's mind. This guy, you know, clearly he had issues. And I know on the news where it talked about the fact that when he got to work, you know, because he got fired, et cetera. But they said when he got there, he was already in a distressed mental state. So just to let you know that. And, you know, he was fired. So that part is true. But he was fired not because of from what I understand, his mental state. He was fired, or he was already distressed, I should say, before he got to work. So he already had issues. And when he gets fired, that just compounded the issue, basically, is what happened. So he was already enraged when he showed up to work. The problem is that we don't know what he was enraged about, and who knows. If he had mental issues, he could have been upset about anything. He's been in trouble for a while mentally. And, you know, again, you look at these things and wonder about friends and family that might be, you know, that maybe could have helped this individual. I don't know. I don't know all the details. And I think that is a tough call for people. It's very difficult that we get it. But that was the true story on him, Sally, and you're absolutely right. You know, you get these things. He gets denied one way, but he buys it through a private sale, end of story. So once again, I don't know how we're going to be able to truly control guns in this country. And, you know, we'll see. Now, I'm going to read the second email because all of these things are coming in because of these issues with guns and assault rifles. So I'm not beating it into the ground. I'm responding to people that are sending things in. So just to let you know that. Plus, it's been on the news again now. So it's coming up. So, Sally, I hope I answered your question on that. Next email. Jim, it is clear assault rifles are becoming mass shooters, weapons of choice. You need to be advocating gun control on a much harder level. Just my opinion, Jim. You are gaining in your audience, and maybe the right people will be listening. You know, I think you are doing a great job, but let's add to it by your speaking out on this issue. And that's from Leon from Lake Charles, Louisiana. So you see, listeners, that this is an issue for people, all right? And I kind of grouped these together because of the fact that they're bringing up the same related issues. Now, in this particular email, he's bringing up, and Leon, I'm assuming you're listening, becoming, you know, that these assault rifles are becoming the weapon of choice. So I want to be able to not mislead people, though, all right, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, in my opinion, about these things. And I do want to clarify them because I think that that's important. So let me just tell you that I went back and I looked at this. So I will tell you, in the past 10 years, assault rifles have been used in 14 public mass shootings, and half of those shootings have occurred, believe it or not, in a very short amount of time. Assault rifles, you guys, have long been a flashpoint in the American gun debate, which is why we're still talking about this, and they were even outlawed in 1994. I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. And then it expired in 2004, but Congress opted not to renew it for whatever the reasons were. Now, some people want to argue it depends upon, you know, the people that are in office at that time, et cetera. And again, I don't get into the politics of it, but the reality is it was not renewed. So that's problematic. I think that, Leon, that when you say that I need to speak out about it, I do speak out about it. And I've made it very clear that, in my opinion, I don't think assault rifles should be in the hands of people other than military as well as law enforcement. And I don't know if anybody out there agrees, then that's fine. If you disagree, you know, that's fine too. You can always call me with a disagreement. I have no problem with that. Or email me, whatever the case may be. But let me tell you something. Here's the other problem. The other problem is that the terrorist groups have taken note of the widespread availability of assault rifles and other guns in the United States. And, you know, Al-Qaeda, as an example, has encouraged its followers to take advantage of the lax gun laws that we have here and to purchase assault-style weapons. Now, remember, some of those people coming here, they may be here legally. They may not have any issues. And now they turn around, you know, and they're part of this group, and now they get access to these weapons. Because, as you know, it's going to be very difficult to get them into the country, you know. And, you know, these people with Al-Qaeda and ISIS, they're making it clear that, you know, America is absolutely, you know, full of these types of weapons. You can get them. You can get them too easy. Look at this last guy that I was just talking about. Now, I will tell you that one common denominator behind these high casualty mass shootings in recent years are these rifles, and they're capable of firing many rounds. You guys already know that, and that's what makes it so bad. So I do think, Leon, that we have to do something about it. I have spoken out about it. I think you indicated in here you're a regular listener. You may have missed the shows where I've talked about that, but I wanted to make it clear just for the record that I am a person that doesn't believe that these weapons need to be in the hands of the everyday citizen. Now, you know, it's been too easy. You know, the ease of purchasing these guns in the United States, you know, that are designed to kill many people in a short period of time. Hey, come on. I mean, logically, we should not want that just as human beings. All right. Now, I'm going to tell you something else that you may not be aware of. There have been 79 mass shootings since 1982, guys. 79 mass shootings since 1982. All right. And let me tell you something. Out of those 79 mass shootings, 63 were committed with guns purchased legally. Do the math. That means 16 weren't. All right? So do I think we have to do something? Yes. Now, Leon, is what I did, I also looked up because I wanted to know about the type of weapons that have been used in mass shootings in the United States between 1982 and August of 2019. I wanted recent information, all right, to be able to properly respond to your question. And that's what I looked up. Now, I will tell you that you want to know the truth about it. As an example, the situation is this. Let's talk about handguns real quick. All right. There were, between in that time frame, there were 93 incidents, okay? 93 incidents of these mass-type shootings. Believe it or not, handguns, 141 handguns were used in those 93 incidents. 141. Rifles during that same time frame of 47 incidents, all right, because 93 were with handguns, all right? Rifles, 47 incidents, 55 rifles were used in those 47 incidents. And we don't stop there. Because the one weapon that people still don't think about that often are shotguns. And let me tell you, shotguns are deadly. They spray out. You know, a bullet is a single bullet that goes out. If it's an automatic rifle, that's different. If it's a hunting rifle that shoots one at a time, whatever the case may be. But let me just tell you, 26 of the incidents that I told you in the total number, all right, it was 26 incidents. Shotguns were 30. 30 shotguns were used in those 26 incidents. So as you could see, this is really across the board in terms of all different types of weapons that get used for this. And I don't think, you know, and I agree, the assault weapons, come on, there's no doubt about it that the assault weapons, you know, in a very short amount of time is going to do a lot more damage than some of these other ones, and I get that. All right? But we got to keep our guard up about all of it, not just a part of it. Now, even with the numbers I just gave you, statistics shows that the weapons used in mass shootings in the United States between 1982 and August 31st of 2019, these calculations are based on 115 mass shooting incidents reported. All right? So I've given you those numbers, and it's a lot. Now, look, admittedly, handguns are the most commonly used weapon type in mass shootings. Handguns, you guys, not AR-15s, handguns. Assault rifles have gained attention in public discussions over the suitability and necessity of semi-automatic rifles for the purpose of self-defense. Some of these people buy them, and that's the excuse that they use it for. All right? But you know what happens is that every time that there's a mass shooting, they're focusing on the issue of gun control. I get it. And if an AR is used, AR-15 as an example is used, yes, it can create a lot more carnage than you would think, you know, with a handgun, et cetera. But all of these weapons are dangerous. So if we're going to do some type of legislation that makes sense, and background checks are being done, I just don't know what magic that we can add to this that's going to turn around and change it significantly. You know, I do recognize the fact that whatever they do, you know, it may help a little bit. But in and of itself, I'm back to the old, you know, hey, you know, I hope something that they can do in Washington is going to make sense. But I just don't see it happening where it's going to reduce any of this down. Because like I told you, it's been around forever and a day. So, look, I know this is very emotional for people. I've talked about this on the show on a number of occasions. The realities are it's out there. We've got to take it. Like I told you last week, we've got to take a deeper dive. So I'm getting these things because people are concerned about it. Leon, I get it. But believe me when I tell you, when I say I am speaking out about this, I am. Let's move on. Jim, I'm a regular listener and really love the show. But it has been a while since you have given some workplace safety tips. Can you comment on dummy cameras? We have them at our job, but we think that they are a waste of time. Thanks, Sonia from Lakewood, California. Well, let me just tell you about these. It's true. Some of these businesses, even when we do our site assessments, because as you know, I have a team that goes out and visits employers and do site assessments. We write their procedures and protocols for the workplace security plan, and we do the active shooter training. And it's true. We go out to some businesses, and some of them do have the dummy cameras up there, so to speak. Matter of fact, I remember one time when I was working patrol where there was an incident at a particular grocery store, and I said, well, let's go check out the cameras, and the person looks at me and says, well, those don't really work. They're dummy cameras. And now we weren't able to go back and look at what the suspect had done, you know, and get an accurate description of him. So, you know, in all honesty, Sonia, I can only tell you with these dummy cameras that I don't think that they're effective, and I can tell you in general that the consensus in the security industry is to avoid dummy cameras, you know, completely. You know, a fake, you know, non-working camera can actually increase the risk of liability because it creates a false sense of security rather than being seen as a way to prevent or reduce crime. Plus, if there's people in the work environment, they know those cameras aren't working. So those are people that can always come back, you know, to the business and do things, and that because they know that the cameras aren't working. So I don't know what kind of business that you're in, but these dummy cameras, in my opinion, I would say that your company needs to stay away from using these trick things as a security measure. And again, this is just my opinion because it can actually increase the risk of liability in so many different ways. These video systems, in my opinion, are very important as well. Look, they've got these outlets to sell covert cameras disguised as wall clocks, pencil sharpeners. I mean, they have different ways that they can do this. The only thing that they have to keep in mind is that with covert cameras, you can never record where there's an expectation of privacy instead, like inside of a restroom or a locker room, you know, because that kind of stuff can lead to lawsuits, to make a long story short. So you don't want to be able to do that. But if I were you, Sonia, I would encourage your employer to, in fact, get real cameras because it can come in very handy when you have to actually go back and look at, you know, something that took place. And the dummy cameras are not going to help. All right? Okay. Now, look, guys, let's move on to these tips. First of all, keep something in mind. You've heard me discuss statistical information regarding child abductions. So I've given you statistical information, but I've never really gone into the deep dive on it in terms of giving you any tips on how to try to avoid some of this. So, you know, this is still an important topic because, you know, as you heard me mention before, human trafficking generates a lot of money. In fact, I think right now it's up to estimating to be about $32 billion per year in revenue for human trafficking. And many of those victims, as we've talked about before, are children. So the children are at risk. And, you know, I talk on the show a lot about kids because I believe that we do have to protect these kids, you know, from many different standpoints. Now, look, the average teen that enters the sex trade in the United States, you guys, 12 to 14 years old. And a lot of these are runaway girls who have been sexually abused as children. See, this is what we talk about when we say that this stuff all starts from the stuff when they're with the kids. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have to watch out for these kids. First of all, they say that they're our future, which is true. But, you know, things like the sexually abusing these kids and things of that nature, that stuff's wrong. So I'm going to send a message out to the guys out there, which I've not done before. Guys, let me tell you something. If you're engaged or use any form of adult entertainment, please consider that you may be actually supporting the cycle of human trafficking. Okay, just as we would like you to fight to protect your own daughter from any form of exploitation, come on, we'd like to, you also to consider that you're exploiting someone else's daughter when you choose to partake in adult entertainment. All right, you got to think about this, all right? And I know it's hard for guys, and that's why I'm addressing this to the guys. I think that you have to think about the fact that what if that was your daughter that you were looking at on that screen? And I'm sure there's some parents that actually end up seeing their child on something like that, and they had no idea. This lady that got killed not too long ago, when she had Uber drop her off by this park and this other guy picked her up. Well, come to find out, she was engaged in a business that the parents had no idea about. She was in college. You guys might remember that one. It was a couple of months ago. I mean, they caught the guy, and he's getting ready to go through the judicial system, but we have to pay attention to these situations. But I'm going to tell you something. These situations also happen at major events. You've heard me talk about major events, okay, and tourist attractions. People's kids drift sometimes. You turn around and they're gone in a shot. They're going over someplace to stand in a line. They're going someplace because they see something that's, that, you know, that grabs their attention. And remember what I told you earlier about putting their names on sweaters or shirts or jackets, whatever the case may be. And now somebody that follows them and sees the name on there and calls them and they pull them away from you. All right. So make sure that you pay attention to that tip as well. So look, I'm going to encourage you to do everything you can to ensure the safety of your kids. And I know that that sounds, you know, almost ridiculous because you want to say, well, I do everything to protect my kids. Well, look, if you did that, why would we have so many of these abductions every year? So let's go through some tips. There's two sets of tips I want to give you. One is going to be safety tips, basically, you know, for children that are old enough to understand what I'm getting ready to say. But parents, you can write this stuff down. You can go back on the show, sit down with your child, and go through some of these things when a child is old enough to understand. But look, they got to know their name and their address and their phone number, all right? And, oh, before I forget, my wife told me this little handy thing that I want to mention because she was with one of our clients one day, and one of the local police departments came in and did a seminar, and they talked about the fact that parents teach kids to scream. Kids scream. Kids scream. You know, you pick up a child and they want that candy. You don't want to give them the candy, or, you know, they don't want to go home yet, and they're kicking and screaming. We don't even pay attention to that. First of all, we make an assumption that that child and that parent and that adult are together, because we, as a society, see that those kind of things happen all the time. And we say, oh, yeah, we got an unhappy camper there. But look, the law enforcement agency that came and spoke at their clients where my wife was at said, teach them to scream something, don't just scream, because we'll ignore it if it's just a scream. But if you turn around and teach them to say things like, you know, you're a stranger. Remember that line about, you're a stranger, it's a stranger. You're not my mommy and my daddy. Teach them things like that versus just with the child screaming. So I want to mention that, all right? And hopefully I'll get some brownie points for mentioning her on the air about that when I get home. All right, let's keep moving. At any rate, look, have them learn how to call 911. Look, a lot of these kids have their own phones these days even. So have them learn how to call 911 to be able to give information, all right? And the other thing is, number three, look, tell them if they're scared, you know, about any adult that's approaching them, tell them to run to safety. I mean, this may seem like common sense, but I'm telling you, people with their fears, they freeze up, they lock up. Okay, tell them, run, all right? Run, all right? Now, we always teach kids not to be rude to grown-ups. We tell them, you know what, don't be rude. That's an adult, all right? Listen, let me tell you something. It's okay to be rude to an adult if you feel unsafe. And tell them that. Tell them if they feel uncomfortable with a particular adult and they want to say no or get away from me or, you know, they want to, there's nothing wrong with them at that point being rude, all right? My parents brought us up that don't be rude to adults, all right? I get that. But we're living in different times now, so rude can be okay, all right? Now, they got to learn the difference between okay, like an okay secret, and a not okay secret. And beware of an adult that asks them to keep a secret from their parents. You tell your kids, if some adult says, hey, don't tell your parents, okay, that's problematic. That's when your child needs to come home and tell you exactly what that adult said and what that secret was all about. That needs to be known, all right? So some secrets are okay, some are not okay. You get an adult that tells your child, hey, just keep this between you and I. You teach your kids that anytime an adult tells them that, they bring that message home and let you know, all right? Now, the next one, number six, is really kind of common sense. Don't let anyone on the phone or at the door know that you're at home. I mean, sometimes the phone may ring or the person comes to the door, and there you are, excuse the expression, home alone. Remember that movie, Home Alone? Look, here's the deal. You know, somebody comes to the door, first of all, they don't have to answer the door or give them instructions of what they should do or not do. All right, and again, some of this is going to depend upon the age of the child because you're not going to leave a five-year-old at home. So we're talking teenagers at this point, all right? They may be expecting somebody or something of that nature. Sometimes people give names through doors. Jim, is that you? Teach them don't do that. Who is it is more proper. And if it's not a name that they recognize, end of story. So keep that in mind. And again, some of these seem like they're common sense, but we don't practice them. All right, we don't practice it. Now, here's another one. Tell these kids if they ever get lost in a mall, they got to go to the closest store clerk to ask for help and then stay there until you're found because they'll put it out. They'll call mall security and they'll put the message out there. Malls are pretty big places. They get to be crowded. Kids can wander off. Tell them to go to a store clerk, okay, or a security person if you see them. You really don't see that many security places. People walking around necessarily at malls. Some malls you do. Just tell them to go to a clerk. Doesn't make any difference, okay? And that clerk will try to put out something to see if they can be found, all right? Now, the other thing that you can do when they go to the mall is tell them if they ever get separated, tell them a particular store to meet you at and wait there for you, okay? So just tell them, you know, if we get lost somehow, meet at See's Candy as an example, okay? They're all over the place. Meet at See's Candy, all right? Go there and just stay there as an example, okay? Now, avoid shortcuts. Tell them to avoid shortcuts when they're walking alone. Sometimes kids want to take shortcuts through an alley, through this or through that. No shortcuts, especially if they're alone, all right? I'm not even comfortable telling you to take shortcuts even when they're with somebody else. It all depends upon the age of the child and all of that. But look, to me, no shortcuts, okay? They normally take the shortcut because they're running late. They were supposed to be home at a certain time. Take the long way, be late, you know, you tell them, and hey, you know, next time leave school a little bit earlier, wherever they've been, leave a little bit earlier so that they can get home on time. But no shortcuts, in my opinion, all right? Now, let me tell you something. Here's another one. Remember I just told you about the kid screaming? Tell these kids if they ever get scooped up, somebody grabs them. Scream, kick, bite, fight. Do whatever they have to, all right? And never trust what that person is telling them. But remember, they should be screaming at the same time, you're not my mother, you're not my father, whatever the case may be, all right? Don't just yell and scream. People take that for granted, all right? Oh, he doesn't want to go home, you know, whatever the case may be. Oh, I guess he didn't get that candy bar he wanted. you know, whatever it may be, have them scream something other than just screaming. You're a stranger. I remember that from this other movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I can't think of what it is now. But at any rate, you're a stranger. Those words are good words to know. Now, here's another one. You know, tell your child to tell you or any trusted adult, somebody that they know, a relative, as someone asking you to do something that makes you feel uncomfortable. They got to listen to that little voice that's telling them in the back of their minds, this isn't right. This is not something that my parents have taught me to do. All right? And they've got to be able to do that. So many of these kids, the other day we had a discussion at lunch with some of my associates, and there was, I don't know, let's just put it this way. There was women there, and there were guys there. And we were talking about this thing about the sexual assaults. And we were talking about something on the news about the recent California laws regarding sexual assaults going back 10 years. And the women were all saying, so we asked a question. The guy said, well, if you're sexually assaulted as a young girl, do you say anything? Because some of these people that are coming out now talking about the sexual assaults, all of the women at the table said, no, if they were sexually assaulted as a young girl, they wouldn't say anything. Well, the guys were like, well, why wouldn't you say something? And they're all saying that it's personal, that they'd be embarrassed, they don't say anything. And they say a lot of people apparently do that, where they don't openly tell people. And that's why now you hear about people coming forward. The last one was about a lady that was on the news. I think maybe that's even how the subject came up. She's 28 years old now. She's suing Disney, you know, and she's now 28 years old. It's something that happened to her when she was 14, and now she's just bringing it up for the first time, and the guys are all saying that they didn't understand this. Well, look, I don't know. You know, maybe it's different with guys or something, obviously, but keeping it personal and private like that, why wouldn't you tell a trusted person? Why wouldn't you, you know, tell your parents about it? But, you know, again, I mean, obviously I'm not a woman. So, and the guy sitting at the table, we couldn't relate to it. We felt that people should speak up about these things. So you got to tell these kids if something like that happens to them that they feel uncomfortable about, they got to bring it to their attention. And I think some of that is based on the relationship maybe between the child and the parents. Because some kids can go to their parents and talk to them about anything. So kind of keep that in mind, parents, when you're out there as well. All right? Now, the other thing that you should do, and this is going to sound crazy, but you should have these kids ask for permission before getting on the internet. Now, I know that sounds insane because these kids have access to internet. Parents don't monitor that stuff. You've heard me talk on the show before about these kids getting on the internet. My son and daughter-in-law just went on a trip, so we've got their two young daughters. And one of the instructions that my daughter-in-law gave me, because these kids all have these tablets, you know, she knows she's not supposed to be getting on certain sites. They're limited. You know, they can only go on these. And these kids are only, 6 and 3. But yet, these kids have these tablets. So kids have access to a technology that we didn't have. All right? So make sure, make them ask for permission. I know that sounds insane, but you want to make sure where they're going and what they're doing. And the other thing is, look, tell these kids never to fear someone else threatening to keep a secret and not tell your parents. All right, let me repeat that. Think about something for a moment. Never fear someone else threatening you to keep a secret and not to tell your parents. Don't let somebody threaten you. Tell them, don't let somebody threaten you about these secret things. All right? Once again, if somebody is even going in that direction, that's when they should be heading to you. All right? That's when they should be going to you. Now, look. Those are some easy things that I think the parents can do. I mean, you know, the children can do, with the children working with their parents and all these different things. The biggest thing is sitting down and talking to these kids about this, which some parents don't do. You have to do it. We're living in different times. So therefore, get on it. You got to do it. Now, let's talk about the safety tips for parents, because this is just for kids, what I just gave you. Now, parents, all right, look, we know what it's like. Well, I can't say we know. You know, parents that have been parents that have raised kids, we know it's a hard job, all right? And parents work hard to establish trust and communication with their kids. But you got to work harder. You got to get them to open up and talk to you And that's that relationship thing. You know, and I know sometimes that can be very difficult. Some kids, you know, they don't want, you know, they think that their parents are, you know, are too, you know, restrictive on them. The relationship starts to break down. But look at what I told you earlier about these kids with these runaways, these runaways. These are girls running away from home. Why are they running away from home? What's going on at home? What type of environment is that? And sometimes it's a good environment, but the child runs away anyway. I don't know. Okay, I'm not a child psychiatrist, so I'm not into that, you know, from that perspective. But you got to work harder to establish a relationship of trust and communication with your children. And that starts, in my opinion, from day one. From day one. So keep that in mind. The other thing is, and you see this on the news from time to time, don't leave your children unattended in a vehicle, whether it's running or not. First of all, you should not be leaving a child in a vehicle when the vehicle is running. Period. I had my granddaughters with me today. I had to go into the bank to do a deposit. All right. What the first thing I did, turn off the car, take the key, lock the door, and it was only a five steps, you know, to go and to do that. You know, and end of story. And I'm keeping my eye on the vehicle the whole time. That's it. You got to do that. Now, on the news, we've seen where children have actually died or people have broken into cars because of the heat. You should never leave a child unattended in a vehicle. You just never know what may happen. All right. Now, the next one becomes a little bit more dicey, in my opinion, because it's very difficult. And that is make sure you know how to find or contact your children at all times. Look, some of these kids get very creative, especially the teenagers, because they don't want their parents to know where they are and what they're doing. So there's a lot of different things out there technology-wise. Some of these kids have cell phones. They've got these find indicators on there where find phone or the GPS setting up where you know where these individuals are. They got these tracking devices on them or whatever. You know, I would hate to say the parents have to resort to that, but if something happens, that phone could be very, very helpful from that standpoint. But you got to know where your children are at all times. I remember even back in the day, and parents would ask, where have you been or where you're going? Those kind of things, you got to do it. And don't be remiss in those responsibilities. Now, don't forget the call list, by the way. A call list is a bunch of emergency contacts with the phone numbers that could be in their phones. Or quite frankly, let me tell you something. People become so dependent on their phones that they forget the memorized numbers. So if they don't have the phone, they don't know the number. So what you should do is also have your children memorize certain phone numbers. All right, your phone number for your cell, the phone number for the house, the phone number for another trusted adult, an aunt, an uncle, whatever the case may be. Have them memorize numbers. It's like the system with clocks now. You look at these kids, look at a clock, they don't know what time it is because on their phones, it gives them the time. It says 4:55. And yet when they look at a regular clock, they don't know what time it is. Teach them these basic things that we grew up with. Anyway, getting back to the phone number, have them memorize the phone numbers, not just be dependent on the phone that they're carrying. Because if somebody takes that phone, what are they going to do at that point? They're not going to know. They're going to be lost. And that's even if they can get or find a phone booth, quite frankly. I hate to say it, but when was the last time you saw a telephone booth? I was somewhere recently and saw one. I couldn't believe it. I just thought it was something that they had set up and that they had left it, but no, it was an actual phone booth. An associate of mine were up north. I'm like, man, this is an actual phone booth. I can't believe it. At any rate, so they're still out there. They're hard to find, but if a child is in trouble, at least if she sees an adult or he sees an adult or runs into a store or something, then they've got the phone number memorized. They can make the call. Somebody will help them. So remember that. Don't let them just be dependent on that technology. All right, that's not always a safe recourse. Now, I'm going to tell you another one. Parents, we get so busy with our work and other things that make us, you know, who we are. But remember, take an active role in your children's activities. Be around for them is the bottom line. I know some parents get out there and they're the soccer dads, the basketball moms, and the this is and the that. So I get all of that. But take it. Look, you got to get involved in your children's activities. That all goes about the relationship and things of that nature. All right, and talk to your children about inappropriate incidences that you've heard in the news. All right, ask them what you think about that. So when you see these things, hey, ask them about it. And let me tell you something. I know some nights you come home and you're tired, but take the time to listen to what your children are trying to tell you. Even about a bad dream, if they wake up in the middle of the night, what did you dream about? Oh, I had a bad dream. What? What's going on? Okay, there could be something that's going on in their life that made it such a bad dream. All right? And the other one, question and monitor anyone who takes an unusual interest in your child. Think about that for a moment. Somebody's got an unusual interest in your child, you make the inquiries about that. Question and monitor that person. All right? Look, we can go through all of these things, and those are basically the ones that I wanted to go through, okay? The last one I want to mention to you is make sure, you know, I know these kids have computers in their rooms and all that kind of good stuff, but, you know, if you keep that computer in a central location where everybody can see it, everybody passing by can see what they're doing, that's something to consider. These kids want their privacy, so they want their computer in their room. I don't know. That's your call. But that's something else that you might have to, that you might want to think about, keeping that computer in there, all right? Now, here's the deal. Next week is what I'm going to be talking to you about, all right? Because one of the things I put in there about targeted violence and the terrorism prevention, I haven't forgotten that one. You know, sometimes I get caught up and I want to get you this other information, so we'll be talking about that next week for sure. Okay, look, until then, I want you guys to think about some of the things we say. Play this, you know, this show over again. Get these things written down. Sit down with your children. And for those of you with this issue about gun control, I've addressed it. I'm not going to keep addressing it until something major happens with the legislators. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, do me a favor, spread the word. Until then, I want you to be aware. I want you to be vigilant. I want you to be safe. More importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, you guys, be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.